Good afternoon. You are tuned into Juno Afternoon here for Thursday, the 29th of March, the year 2018. I'm Jeff Fran. I'll be your host for today. Today we'll be talking with guests about the film Uprivers. Michelle Elfers will be here to talk about the upcoming Becoming an Outdoors Woman workshop. We'll learn about the Safe Bars program with guests Britta Thompson, Allison Hotkamp, and Andrea Budbill. And we'll find out about what's happening in the art world with guest Nancy DeCherney. That bird note, music and more today on a Juno Afternoon. The forecast for tonight, mostly clear skies, low temperatures around 28 degrees. Forecast for Friday, mostly sunny weather with high temperatures around 39.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. There's disappointment in Canada after the Pope decides not to apologize for abuse at Indian residential schools. Dan Karpinchuk has more.
In a letter released this week by Canadian bishops, Pope Francis said he cannot personally apologize for Canada's residential school system. The residential schools, funded by the Canadian government and run by churches, operated for more than a century from the mid-1800s. Native children were taken from their families and forced to attend as a way of assimilation into white society, but thousands were physically, sexually, and emotionally abused. The Canadian government and the United Presbyterian and Anglican churches have apologized. The Catholic Church, which ran about two-thirds of the 130 schools across Canada, has not. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau personally brought up the issue when he met with the Pope nearly a year ago. Trudeau says he's disappointed.
We will keep working with communities, keeping working with individuals on the path of reconciliation, because we know that taking responsibility for past mistakes and asking forgiveness is something that is core to our values as Canadians.
The chief commissioner of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which looked into the schools and interviewed survivors, also urged the Pope to apologize. Murray Sinclair says the refusal offers high-profile support for those who believe the survivors have not told the truth about their experiences, and that will lead to further divisions between survivors and Canadian society.
And so there were many residential school survivors up here who were looking forward to this Pope doing something more than had been offered in the past. And that's going to be a tremendous disappointment to them, and I think it may in fact set the healing back in many individuals and communities.
In 2010, the Pope apologized to Indigenous people in South America for the grave sins of the Church during colonialism. Native leaders have invited the Pope to come to Canada to meet with Indigenous people about the issue. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A young Native artist and activist walked across the Flathead Reservation in Montana for 4 days to draw attention to violence against Native women. Nikki Willett of Montana Public Radio reports.
This is Marita Growing Thunder's second walk across the reservation to raise awareness about missing and murdered Indigenous women.
I haven't met a family who this hasn't impacted.
Today, she's wearing one of the hundreds of ribbon skirts she's made to honor Indigenous women who have disappeared or lost their lives, largely unnoticed outside of Native communities.
This purple dress I'm wearing today is for Raylan Charlot, and she was murdered in 2015 over here in this in the Flathead Indian Reservation where we're at right now. She taught at Kicking Horse Job Corps, and you know, I just thought I'd wear it because it's... Every time I'm down this road, I think about her. She was definitely, Raylan was definitely beloved in this community.
Growing Thunder says Indigenous women who are murdered, disappear, or victims of violence are important members of their families and communities, not just numbers. But, she says, one of the reasons she's walking is to advocate for a registry or database that tracks how many Native women are hurt or lost. As we're talking, a man pulls over on the side of the road to see what's going on.
Oh, I thought maybe there was an accident.
Oh, no. I'm walking 80 miles.
Are you proud of you, young lady?
Thank you.
Okay, you got girls. Be safe now.
Thank you.
Take care.
Growing Thunder says this kind of thing has happened a lot during the walk, but she's also been spit and yelled at. Growing Thunder wrapped up her walk Thursday at the southern edge of the reservation. For National Native News, I'm Nikki Willett.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Kewanic Broadcast Corporation announces the Alaska Native Art Auction, April 4th in Anchorage, Alaska. See amazing artwork from across the Alaska Native community. Reserve a table or donate art at knba.org. Proceeds benefit Native News programming. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
It's 6 minutes past the hour. You are tuned into June Afternoon. Our first guests in the studio are Matt Jackson, Carrie James, and Jacinda Mack. They're involved in a film called Uprivers. Thank you for coming down to the station, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
First of all, tell me about the film Uprivers.
Well, my name's Matt Jackson, and the film grew out of my concern about transboundary mining, especially the KSM mine on the Unic River, but really the whole mining boom in British Columbia, and 40-plus mines being developed in the watersheds of the Unic, Stikine, and Taku Rivers, but also throughout the province of B.C. And I was looking for some way to help to get involved, and while I was on that journey, I was lucky enough to meet the two women that I'm here with today, Carrie James and Jacinda Mack, who are both on the front lines of their communities as they're fighting to protect our watersheds. But they're also bringing, I think, a fresh perspective and a different energy to the issue that I thought was really story-worthy. And as the more I got to know these two people, the more I realized, wow, this story really needs to be shared. You know, we've got one person on the Alaskan side, one person on the British Columbia side, and it was just really complimentary, and it kind of begged to be told.
Jacinda, Carrie, what roles did you have in the production?
My name is Jacinda Mack, and I'm from the community of Quetzalt of the Tsleil-Waututh Nation, and we're located in central British Columbia. I was involved in this project. Matt contacted me after we had we've been dealing with mining in our territory in British Columbia since the time of contact. Really, it was part of the big colonization and the gold rush era, and we had the Mount Polly mine disaster happen in our territory in 2014, and so I've been really at the forefront of sharing that story, and the work that I've done here in Alaska is to help educate people around what the dangers are of mining, especially coming out of British Columbia and Canada, that are highly unregulated and pose a very real threat here in Alaska, being downstream.
Carrie, how about you?
Well, my concern, I've been an elected tribal leader off and on throughout the last 10 years, and the concern of our king salmon dwindling, and also the unavailability of our hooligans, which come out of the Unic River. The Care Sulfates Mitchell mine is in a different process right now. They just need money to build one of the largest open pit mines in the world. The two tailings dams are going to be taller than the Hoover Dam, and if there's some kind of catastrophic breach, it will really affect Ketchikan in southeast Alaska. We have over $1 billion fishing industry. We have a successful tour industry, and we need to protect our waters and protect our rivers.
Tell me about the process of making the film. What kind of reaction did you get from various people who you told them you were making the film?
Well, they were all in support of it, and many of our people in our community don't realize what's going on the other side of the border. The Care Sulfates Mitchell mine is only about 8 miles inside of the Canadian border, just upstream from the back island of our Ketchikan. So I've received a lot of positive response, and there are many citizens that are concerned. They want to know what they could do to help. And right now it's just giving them the knowledge of what the threats are.
Matt, what was the process of making the film?
I never thought I would make a film. I never studied it in college or anything. It was really kind of an accident that I ended up completing this project. And it was a process for me to figure out what the story was actually was, to find the story. For a while, I kind of thought that maybe I would go up either the Unic River or the Stikine River and kind of travel to the sites of these mines and document that. But as I learned more about the issue and I met Carrie and Jacinda, I went through a transition of realizing that the story that needed to be told was their story. And from there, it was just kind of an act of observation and collaboration. It was really Carrie and Jacinda that the story is just their lives. It's what they're doing every day. And so it was just a matter of kind of teasing that out and getting it on camera and then distilling it into 30 minutes, which is, you know, the story is a whole life, and you could to distill it down into 30 minutes was quite a process.
How do you do that?
Gosh, that's a good question. It's kind of it's an instinct, and I never studied it, so I don't even have a good vocabulary for it. I think there's like cinema people have words to describe what we did, but I don't. We just took the pieces that were the most compelling, and we kind of started with the philosophy that we wanted to tell a story that was based on emotions and characters and had a strong narrative, and we really followed that and those trends in Carrie and Jacinda's lives, and that is really what led the process.
What do you call the takeaway? What do you want viewers to bring back from watching the movie?
Carrie, I think you, or I'm sorry, Jacinda, you have a really good way of describing that. Do you want to?
I guess for me, being part of this film, the message that I would like to share with folks here in Alaska is that this is a very real threat. And as we've seen with the disaster at the Mount Polly mine in 2014, which happened in my territory, we've really experienced a lot of impacts that haven't really been widely shared, I guess, because of the mining industry really dominating the conversation in British Columbia. And the mining industry has a huge foothold in British Columbia, where a lot of companies are headquartered due to the very loose regulations and lack of, you know, enforcement. So sharing our story here in Alaska really is to help, I guess, educate people about these risks. And I spent some time in Wrangell a couple of years ago. We did a water ceremony there with the folks sharing the story, and it really hit me, you know, being there in Wrangell. I was looking around at all of the shops that are based on, you know, engine, you know, boats, basically all accommodating all of the fishing vessels and the everything of being on the water there. And I was thinking, you know, what this impact would really feel like in Alaska, if you can imagine being here in Southeast and never going out on your boat on the water again, never harvesting any salmon again, you know, never drinking water, clean water from the land here again. If all of that had been contaminated, you know, how would that change your life here as an Alaskan, as an Indigenous person in this land? You know, these impacts are very long term. They're very, you know, impactful, and they're very real. So just wanting people to really consider that and to become engaged and involved in addressing this for, you know, for everybody's sake.
We're talking about the film Upriver. It's going to be shown.
The film will be shown tonight at UAS, the Egan Lecture Hall, at 7 p.m.
Is there a charge?
No, it's free. We just want to get the story out.
Who is it funded by?
We got a lot of generous support from Patagonia, the clothing company. We also got support from Alaska Native Brotherhood, Alaska Native Sisterhood, Camp 14. Sea Alaska supported, Ketchikan Indian Community supported, as well as just a handful of private small donors.
When you were telling people what you were working on, what was the reaction? Was it somebody saying, this is a foreign country, it's not close to me at all?
I think a lot of people in Alaska and in America on this issue feel kind of helpless. I know I did. That's how I ended up making this film, because it is an international issue. The mines are in Canada. I can't just call my senator. I can't write a letter to the EPA. It's much more complicated. And so people were interested to learn more about how the whole thing works, to understand what's going on in Canada, because a lot of people in the United States don't really understand. And I think that's really one of the most interesting things about the film, and a lot of its relevance to the issue is that it is a story that's equally applicable on either side of the border, and it's really applicable anywhere that clean water or Indigenous people's connection with the land is at risk. So I think Carrie and Jacinda have done a good job of living a story that is very pertinent to our situation, but it's also universal.
Carrie, how about you?
Well, I grew up living our traditional way of life, and I still live the same way today, and I'm passing the knowledge on to my kids, and I'm just very concerned what will happen if the Unuk River were to be contaminated any further. But we need to look ahead and protect our environment for the next seven generations.
One of the things that we're also working on is that Carrie and I have been working together on these issues for the last few years, and we've attended EPA meetings, we've attended the Prince of Wales Island-wide Mining Forum. We were recently also at an Indigenous leadership gathering in Tulalip, Washington, and Indigenous leaders from Alaska, the Yukon, British Columbia, Washington, Idaho were all coming together to commonly address issues around water protection. And so not only from mining, but from other industrial activities as well. So there's this movement that's happening. There's this energy that's coming together where people are wanting to work together and to blur those border lines. You know, we're drawing on ancient connections of bloodlines, of trade, of, you know, mutual cooperation to protect our communities. And it's not only for Indigenous communities, it's for everybody. And so I think that that's a really strong message that we're really needing to work together and to, you know, these borders only exist in the human imagination, and the salmon and the water don't follow those borders. And that's something, you know, that Carrie states really well in the film. And I just really encourage people to come out. We're going to be there to answer questions tonight and show this film, which I think was really well done. So I'd just like to hold my hands up to the production team, to Jackson and JD and Ellie and Zach, who are all involved in this process. And I think it's going to be a great evening.
I've been talking with Matt Jackson, Casey, Carrie James, and Jacinda Mack. Anything you'd like to add?
It would just be great. I know that Matt and Carrie have been showing the film. They've been in a few other places, and we're also looking to organize in British Columbia as well to bring this film there and to bring it down to Victoria, to our provincial legislature, to really show that there's this solidarity and that the people who are impacted really care about this issue. It's an important issue, and that we are working together to effect positive change.
And I'll just add, we are doing kind of in addition to our formal public screenings, we're doing a distributive screening model where if you want to show the film at home or organize your own screening at a church or a coffee shop or wherever you can bring together your community, we really want to support that as a way to spread the story, but also get people invested in the issue and get people organized for the next steps that are coming. There is an international solution that is in the works. We don't have time to talk about it today, probably, but if you want to learn more about that international solution, come to the screening tonight or check out our website at uprivers.org, and you can find out how to host the screening or get connected to the rest of the issue.
And the screening is tonight at 7 o'clock.
Tonight, 7 p.m. at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall.
All right, Matt, Carrie, Jacinda, thank you so much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. One of the rarest natural habitats in America is found in Florida. Thousands of years ago, rising sea levels isolated much of the Florida Peninsula as an island. During that long isolation, a unique oak scrub ecosystem developed. The Florida scrub jay is one among many special animals and plants that evolved with this habitat, now protected by the Archbold Biological Station. Eastern towhees, and loggerhead shrikes are common in the dense scrub habitat. But unlike the towhee and the shrike, Florida scrub jays are found nowhere else. Because they're fascinating birds and quite tame around humans, the jays have been studied for many years. They live in family groups, the young of the previous year helping to raise the current young. This altruistic behavior seemed surprising until studies with banded birds showed that one of the young would immediately take the place of an adult that died. Because they depend on acorns during winter, Florida scrub jays can survive only in oak scrub. Populations have declined by 90% because the birds have lost much of their special habitat to citrus groves, pastures, and development. Now, people are working hard to protect what remains. BirdNote celebrates groups everywhere that are improving bird habitat. Learn more at birdnote.org.
Reach is fabulous and 40. The community is invited to the Reach 40th Anniversary Party on Saturday, April 14th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Elizabeth Paratrovich Hall. Enjoy a reception buffet catered by Breeze Inn, music by DJ Manu, a silent auction, drawing for the 40th Anniversary Raffle, and a no-host bar. Tickets available by calling 796-7202 or online at canvasarts.org. This message brought to you by Reach.
It's 21 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned into June Afternoon. My next guest is Michelle Elvers, here to talk about the Becoming an Outdoors Woman workshop. Michelle, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jeff. It's fun to be here.
Now, you sell out. Are you full yet?
We sell out really fast. This is our 11th year in Southeast Alaska, and it seems to get more popular every year. We opened registration last year, and it sold out within a few hours. So it's a really fun weekend. This weekend is May 11th to 13th for the Becoming an Outdoors Woman workshop. And, you know, we've done it for 11 years. We go out for 3 days to Echo Ranch Camp, and we have classes in fishing, like fly fishing and spin casting, and we have classes in hunting skills. So, you know, how to shoot a rifle, archery, you know, firearm safety. And we have classes for outdoor skills, so kayaking and how to cook in a Dutch oven, alpaca rafting. We actually have people raft down Cowie Creek. And so we do, every participant can take 4 classes, and they can choose what they want to take. And we have a lot of fun, and we have lots of other events during the weekend where people can learn skills. We even do laser tag at night. You know, it's just a really fun getaway weekend for women to come out to Echo Ranch.
Is there a charge?
There is. So it's $275 for the 3 days. That includes transportation from town to Echo Ranch. It includes meals and lodging and classes. There's a couple classes that may have a small extra charge. One of those, actually, probably our most popular class, is a class we started last year called Wild Apothecary. And it's a little bit of wild edibles, which we've done in the past, which you go out and you learn about some of the plants that are growing that you can eat and use. And then participants will go out, look for plants, take them back, and then we'll have an instructor there who will show them how to make things. So some of the things they make are Devil's Club salve or a seaweed facial mask. They've made nettle tea. It's really cool. So you get to make these things and then bring them home with you. And it's turned out to be one of our most popular classes.
What would you say is your most popular class?
I would say that it would be the Wild Apothecary with a very close second of the alpaca rafting. Those are pretty popular. But I'm going to have to put in a plug for my favorite class, because it's the one I teach, which is fly fishing. And it is actually pretty popular every year. People like to take it. And so we'll, you know, each class is about 3.5 hours. And so we'll go through equipment you need. So for fly fishing, we show you how to set up a rod and a reel. We show you the flies. We teach you how to put it all together, and then we actually go out and we fish in Echo Cove. And at that time, there's Dolly Varden coming in, so we get to fish for Dolly Varden, and it's really fun. So pretty much there's something for everybody there. And the cool thing about this weekend is it's over Mother's Day, which is the same as last year. We got it over Mother's Day, and so we've had a lot of mother-daughters come, and that's just, it's really fun. We always love when we get those groups. So it's fun for people to think about as a special getaway with your daughter or your mother. And we do, you asked before about scholarship or about the cost, and I do want to mention that we also offer scholarships for people who need them, and they can contact us, and we can help you figure that process out. So don't let the cost, you know, discourage you from looking into it and attending.
What should people bring?
So we'll provide a list when you register, but things that you'll need a sleeping bag. The cabins at Echo Ranch have wood stoves in them, so if it's cold, you can heat it up, and they have mattresses on the beds. But you'll need some kind of a sleeping bag or, you know, sheets and a pillow and a blanket. Outdoor gear, so rain gear, as we know and you know, is really important. So rain boots, rain jackets, even if it doesn't look like rain, bring your rain jacket. You know, layers, we always dress in layers here. So typically what you would need for outdoors, sunglasses can be a good idea. Sometimes we get really great weekends. Echo Ranch is, you know, for people who haven't been there, it's, I think, possibly the most beautiful spot in Juneau, which is hard to say because there's a lot of beautiful spots, but it's right at the edge of the road system. You're looking out across Burners Bay and the Chilkat Peninsula, and when the weather's good, it is just glorious out there. And we have campfires at the beach at night. We play beach volleyball, and it's pretty spectacular.
Sounds like a fantastic opportunity.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the fly fishing. Are the rods and reels all brought to you?
Yes, they are. So we actually, Bo owns quite a bit of its own equipment. So like I said, we bring rods and reels, and we have pretty nice Sage rods. And we have a lot of our own equipment that we bring, and we bring every year, and we take really good care of. So participants don't need to bring anything. They show up. These courses are really meant for beginners, so you don't have to know a single thing. And what we really focus on is hands-on instruction, so getting people to feel really comfortable at first, and we provide a really safe environment. The courses are designed for women, so anyone can attend, but we design them to be in an environment that's really comfortable for women. And we find that being able to touch and feel and do things themselves is the best way to learn. So we focus on that kind of learning process. And it's pretty amazing. I mean, at least in our fly fishing class, fly fishing can seem really daunting. And within 3.5 hours, we have every one of our participants up and fishing for Dolly Varden. And it's pretty exciting to see that.
Sounds like an exciting opportunity. How many people do you fit in the can?
So we have space for about 80 participants, and I do want to emphasize, like I said before, that it fills up really fast. So if you're interested in taking the workshop, it's a good idea on April 2nd, the morning of April 2nd, to get online. The website is bow.adfg.alaska.gov. And register right away. Online right now, you can read about all the classes that are offered in the description. So get on, get familiar, decide what you'd like to take, because you're going to be asked in the registration process to put in your first, second, third choices. So be ready for that and get in and register right away. We are giving preference to first-timers. So if it's your first time, you will have a preference for a period of time to get into the class. But, you know, if you're a second-timer, just register too. You might get on a wait list, or you might get in if we don't fill with first timers right away. But again, we're trying to get beginners who are new to skill, so we want to open this up to as many people as we can in the community.
How many repeats do you have?
Gosh, so last year we probably had maybe a quarter or less of the total group come back, and the rest were first-timers. So over the years, we always have some people who repeat, because it's pretty fun. And, I mean, we offer so many classes that you can't possibly – you get four choices. So you can come back, and there's plenty more to take and plenty more things to learn. So we do get lots of people who want to come back.
Michelle Elfers, thanks so much for coming down and talking about the Bow workshops.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Anything you'd like to add?
Just come, you know, and if you're nervous, it's okay. I went years ago myself up in Fairbanks before we offered it here, and I was really nervous to learn how to shoot a gun, but they made it really easy and not scary, and now I hunt and get deer, and Bo got me there.
All right, thanks for coming by.
Thanks.
How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole?
Miss Libby Rodrick should be appearing in concert on Friday, April 27th at 7 o'clock at Northern Union Church. Tickets are available at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center at Hearthside Books. Again, that's Libby Rodrick, Lion Anchorage performer, Friday, April 27th at 7 p.m. In the studio with me, now we have people involved in the Safe Forest Program, Britta Jonathan, Allison Honnekamp, and Andrea Budbill. Thank you so much for coming down to the station, everybody. The Safe Bars Coalition. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, Safe Bars Southeast. So we are a group of community members, some different agencies around town, sort of. We all came together through, well, Britta kind of got us together, and we got to be trained from the Safe Bars program, which is based in D.C. and I think Massachusetts as well. And we got trained on how to train people, bartenders or nightlife employees, on how to do bystander intervention to prevent sexual assault and harassment.
Britta, tell me more about the impetus for doing this.
The impetus for this came from, so Aware serves some rural communities, one of which is Skagway, and a couple people from the community asked for resources to work with the bars there. And so I came across Safe Bars, and Juneau has the same problem in our bars as Skagway does. And so it made sense to bring this program in for all of Southeast.
Where did it originate?
The program originated in D.C.
Tell me more about it, please.
Sure. The program was originally started by Lauren Taylor, who has worked with gender-based violence issues since the 1970s, since before even Aware was around. And she has been working with bars in the D.C. area on this two-hour training to help bar staff be able to identify sexual harassment and discrimination, and when they intersect with other issues of oppression as well, to identify them, to understand the severity of it, of these harassments escalating to assault, and recognizing their role in being able to intervene and stop more serious harassment or discrimination from happening. So what it does is it empowers front of house staff at establishments that serve alcohol to say, we have your back. This is a value at our establishment. These are things that we won't accept here. And we feel prepared to intervene when there's an issue that we see as problematic.
And I think that's the most exciting part of the program, is being able to give people the tools to maybe spot something that will or may escalate to an assault. And just to be able to have those tools in your toolbox, even in our training that we had to become trainers, there were a lot of us that had kind of eye-opening experiences within that training.
I guess I'm interested in what are some of the tools.
Yeah.
Some of the tools are, so we practiced a lot in the training, and the people who, the establishments that choose to have this training will also practice these tools, how to distract, delegate, or
direct
when they see an intervention and or when they see a harassment or an incident occurring. And so just knowing, one, that a lot of us are already doing these in different ways already, and then just piecing it together, saying that, oh, yeah, in doing this and doing it more and valuing it, I can prevent the sexual assault. And so these tools are different ways that each individual can decide what feels safe to them, what feels most comfortable in that situation, and if they should be going directly to the person who's being oppressive or discriminatory, if they should delegate this role to someone else at the bar because maybe that's safer for that individual, or if just distraction is enough to get the attention of the person who's surviving the oppression and get them out of that situation.
Are any of these tools involved with self-defense?
So Lauren Taylor also came when she was here training us as trainers. She trained UAS students in self-defense, and she has a extensive background in self-defense, but these aren't so much self-defense. In fact, the majority of her self-defense that she did was just learning how to use your voice to empower, and it felt very nonviolent and empowering, and showing that just in using our voice, when we as a community, as a collective, or as individuals learn to use our voice in more powerful ways, we can do a lot. We don't need to resort to violence.
Who is this aimed at?
This is aimed at alcohol-serving establishments in the communities of Southeast, specifically Juneau. And we also had requests to kind of break it out into some of the tourism corners of our communities.
And we are already set up to train a couple of bars in town. We are hoping to get as many bars as possible because April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and the cruise ships are going to show up in May. And so getting these bars prepped and ready to go for the influx of tourism workers that are going to be coming to town, and tourists, so they can be prepared. And it's pretty easy to sign up. You can just contact Britta at Aware, and her phone number is 586-4902. Or it's probably easiest to just email us, and we're called Safe Bars Southeast. And so you can email us at safebarssoutheast@gmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook and like our page, and we can we're going to have more of a conversation on our Facebook page about this. And it's awesome because when you get the training through your bar, then you will get sort of certified, sort of. You'll get to have a Safe Bars sticker on your door. So people know that your establishment might be safer than other places. And knowing that a bar is safe downtown definitely increases your business. A lot of more people want to go down there. And talking to Britta about this and my friends, we know that if we don't feel safe somewhere, we're not going to go there as a group. We're going to go somewhere else. And so just having the trust in the bar staff is important for the community. And just even that safe bar sticker where I can walk by the bar and go, oh, my gosh, I think I'm going to go in here because this is a safer place. And these bartenders and front of house staff are trained in intervening when they see something early on.
And we don't want to say that just because a bar has been trained in safe bars, that incidences of violence and discrimination aren't going to happen. It just says that their staff has been trained to intervene to stop discrimination and harassment. Oppressors need to stop discriminating and harassing. Mm-hmm. This just states that these are the values of the establishments that receive our training, and this is what they're practicing to be prepared to do.
How long is the training?
It's 2 hours.
It's 2 hours, and we try to keep the training to 15 people because it can be sort of complex material, and we want to make sure that we use our time wisely. And the training is $100 and with a $50 cancellation fee.
Anything you'd like to add about if we're going to ask?
I'd like to add just something that it can be really cool about a place getting the training is so they're learning bystander intervention for their customers, but also for themselves. A lot of bartenders or people who work in alcohol serving establishments experience a lot of harassment themselves. And so it's also a way that either they can intervene if they're experiencing their own harassment, or they can help their colleagues. And also during the training, there's opportunities for the staff to share some of their own experiences or share things that they've seen. And so it's sort of a cool way to empower them to realize, like, what they're already doing that's working really well. And so we're just kind of there to give them some extra tools and thank them for doing what they're already doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one more time, can you repeat, how can people get more information?
People can get more information by calling myself, Britta, at AWARE, 586-4902. That's our prevention office, not the main office. Or emailing us at safebarsoutheast@gmail.com. And then one last bit of information is alcohol, as we know, is not the cause of sexual assault or violence, but it is implicated in about over 50% of the cases that we see here. And so this is just one avenue that we can take as a community to start to intervene and decrease the amount of sexual assault that we see in our community.
All right, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh,
from the harbor with not even a thimble for the drifter to bathe. Oh,
and you're attending to June afternoon. Libby Roderick, she's coming to town April
27th.
It's not too early to start thinking about things
like this.
It's
a long time ago, but put it on your calendar. It's in the future. Put it on your calendar now so you don't miss out. Those are the things. You can get the tickets now. It's fine. But we're going to talk about this week. Okay. Tonight at 7:30, we're doing this really wonderful theater project at the Jack. It is finally in production. It is amazing. There are five storytellers: Ernestine Hayes, Paul Marks, Lillian Petershore, Marcelo Quinto, and Walter Soboloff, telling their stories about the history of Juneau from their youth. And it's mostly, a lot of it is related to the old Indian village. And one of the things that to me makes it very significant, or what really intrigued me about it, is as we're getting ready to take the old Jack down and put up the new Jack, it's really good to be reflecting on what the whole history of the neighborhood and the area is. And the first production was this morning. We are, as part of our Any Given Child project, bringing all eighth graders to see this. So half of them came this morning and half will come tomorrow. And the first production was amazingly, knock your socks off, don't miss this kind of thing. So there's lots of tickets available. We have a performance tonight, tomorrow night, Saturday there's a matinee, and then Saturday night. So you have plenty of opportunities, because you also don't want to miss Cyrano de Bergerac. I went to see that last week. It is hilariously funny, but touching. It's a beautiful, magical, wonderfully done performance at Perseverance Theater. Another one that I would say, do not miss that. You have a couple of opportunities. Put it on the list.
When you say you have a nose for good theater.
Uh-huh. Yes, indeed. Clean up your clean up scoop. Prior to the Easter egg hunt, the Grateful Dogs of June are sponsoring a cleanup. This is from 4:30 to 5:30 tomorrow. I guess it's must be out at Thunder Mountain High School, because that's where they later do the Easter egg hunt, and you don't want to find the wrong things. From 5:30 to 9:30, Real Spring Fever at Rockwell, an evening with kick-ass fly fishing women. Build skills, network, get inspired. There's tickets at the Arts Council, Hearthside Books, and Rainy Day Retreats. All proceeds are donated to the Alaska Fish and Game Becoming an Outdoor Woman program. Also at 9 o'clock on Friday night, there is the Queer Film Fest Torch Song Trilogy at Goldtown Nickelodeon. Saturday, as I mentioned, it is the 34th annual Easter Egg Hunt out at Thunder Mountain High School. And the Zach Gordon Youth Center is sponsoring this with over 7,000 candy-filled eggs. You also get a free gift, perhaps. Bring it back.
I read 10,000.
Well, you read 10,000? Okay, and I'll raise you two. Oh, okay. Anyway, pre-register over at Zach Gordon. You can get the information on how to do that by going to our website, which is www.jhc.org, and going to the calendar. The phone number is there. You need to be there promptly at 10 a.m. to start these things. Anyway, it's spring, obviously. There's a Glacier 10K and mile races out at the Mendenhall Glacier. This road race provides opportunity to see how you're running. It's a fundraiser for Thunder Mountain Track and Field, so you can register in various locations. Also get that information from us. 5:30 to 10 p.m. an Admiralty Island gathering to celebrate the memory of Michelle Ridgway at the Juno Yacht Club on the memory of Michelle and her gift to science, and leading our Hawk Inlet study, David Katzik, through song, story and song, brings the Tlingit spiritual connection to water. It's a potluck at 5:30. Please bring a dish. It sounds like it's free. There's the Alumni and Friends Annual Spring Banquet and Auction out at the UAS Egan Library at 6 o'clock on Saturday. And there is She Has Risen, an almighty drag show at the Rendezvous at 8 o'clock and at 10 o'clock. So win cash for the most miraculous Easter Mass bonnet and come early and ready to hunt for eggs. I don't know. I don't know about that. Okay, there's an interactive comedy show at UAS Rec Center at 7 p.m. out at UAS. Again, you can see our Juno Histories Project, Cyrano de Bergerac, and She Has Risen, the Almighty Drag Show on Saturday night. Sunday, you can see the Cyrano. Monday, Juno Eat Well, Live Well at the Mendenhall Public Library. On Tuesday, a Wilderness First Responders Recertification, Empty Bowl-a-thon at the Canvas. Help us make bowls for the annual Glory Hole Empty Bowls fundraiser. And Mud Rooms with Little White, or just White Lies, at Northern Light United Church. The music is by Tom Loker, and all profits are benefiting Great Bear Recovery. It's Trivia Tuesday at the Imperial. Let's see, there's all sorts of other things. Felted Flora and Fauna at the Color Wheel on Wednesday. So there's a few things. Like I said, get your tickets for Libby Roderick now. That's not coming for a whole month, but you might as well plan ahead. See what that's like. So we have plenty of things. I hope to see, really do hope to see you at the Juno Histories Project on Yaktasani Project, Noble People of the Land. It's an amazing project. Ryan Conroe and Frank Katas have been working on it since January. They interviewed many, many people in the community, and these folks, the five that I mentioned, will be telling the stories that they've evolved from that. And there's music by Elijah and Paul Marks, and Abel Ryan did the backdrop. It's just beautiful. So do come. It's an opportunity. There's been a lot of conversation in our community about cultural awareness, and this is a really good place to learn more about our community that many of us may not know much about. So, see you there.
What are some of the things happening in the far distant future?
Far distant future.
Like April and May.
Well, we have Jazz and Classics coming up, and you can be getting your tickets for that for sure. Right around the corner, the Fine Arts Scholarships applications are due on the 2nd. And then there's a couple of scholarship opportunity on the 15th that's Catalyst Grant thing. I think it's Jazz and Classics we should be getting ready for. We're not quite sure what's going to happen in the summer. We're working on that. Things may change. We don't know. We don't know where we're going. I love wandering, you know. If anybody has any ideas, give me a call. So, but that's what I think we should be looking forward to. There will be a couple more theater project things happening. But anyway, that's what I got for you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Come by, Nancy.